I'm Olivia.
And I'm Drew.
And we...
I don't know why I always feel awkward after the end. Like, I have to say something like, yes, we are. But it's like, do I have to say it like that? What should I say after? Nothing? Just not in agreement. What?
You're just because every time you're like, what do we say? How do I say hello?
I know.
How do I say bye?
That's even harder somehow.
How do I say bye?
So, I feel weird asking you how you've been because
we've been talking.
But
the last time we talked, and it was being recorded, it was right before I went on a trip.
Yes.
So since then, I have been on a trip to out of the country and then been on my own mental health trip back inside the country of post-trip sadness.
Yeah.
And then also post-trip, why did I spend so much money? You know that?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, wow. Definitely.
It's like, so you go on a trip for 2 weeks and then you come back and you pay off your trip for the next 8 weeks. And you're like, I saved money for this trip and it didn't matter.
Oh, but you had a good time.
I did have a good time.
Yeah.
I went to Japan.
Oh, it looked so beautiful.
Taiwan. And the next time I go, you should come.
Yes. I have always wanted to go to Japan.
I always want to go to Japan.
And I would love to go back to Taiwan.
Yes. Yeah. And then we could record there.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. You need to go back to Taiwan, even though since I've been back, there has been several earthquakes.
Yes.
Since. Not very many casualties because the infrastructure is insanely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But just like that, the earth just be wanting to take Taiwan out.
I know. And Taiwan's like, you'll never take us.
I know. If China can't have us, you can't right. have us.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think I'm okay. I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm good. Since the last time we recorded, I started a new/old job.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So that's been good. I like my job. And my body has also just been falling apart more than usual. I have gotten sick like 3 times since we recorded.
I know. And then I felt like when it was finally, you were like, I'm good now. I was like, actually, now I'm not good.
I know.
Oh boy. It's like life outside of a podcast is really hard.
Yeah.
If we could get paid to do this,
that would be amazing. So that's why it's been a while, y'all. Mm-hmm. Travel and jobs and mental and physical deterioration.
Yeah. We're like, I am unwell.
Very. Which is kind of fitting for our topic today. Yeah.
Just like last time, it's themed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
And you start, you yes. go first.
And it's medical.
Medical themed. Yeah.
Oh, and we also, I will be posting a picture on our Instagram because I have a cute new plague doctor squishable
mm-hmm.
that my mom got me that I think goes with our theme very well.
Yeah, I think he's actually now our mascot.
I think he should be our mascot too.
Yeah. You have to share his name, which is?
It's Wilson. Not like Castaway, but like Dr. Wilson from House.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, I got really obsessed with yellow fever when I read the book Fever 1793 in school.
Oh, I've always wanted to read them.
Yeah, it's called Fever 1793 by Laurie Halse Anderson, and I read it in, I think it was middle school.
Okay.
And I got so obsessed with learning about yellow fever. And then I started listening to This Podcast Will Kill You and was very excited when they did an episode all about the origin of yellow fever. So I'm going to start with how yellow fever is spread. Okay, so yellow fever is a vector-borne disease, meaning that it is transmitted by mosquitoes. And the it has, I know, mosquitoes are little devils.
Little devils.
And it has a similar transmission to malaria. It's spread by the Aedes aegypti mosquito. And
the Aedes?
What? Aedes, like A-E-D-E-S.
Oh, okay. Like they don't Aedes have
aegypti.
They don't have like Aquanet hair. No, they don't.
And those mosquitoes transmit the disease.
If that mosquito has blue eyeshadow on, you better watch yourself.
Truly.
Also, can I interject something random about mosquitoes?
Sure.
When I was in Taiwan, because mosquitoes there are huge because it's a tropical place because it's like the same latitude as Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like you kind of get the vibe. But mosquitoes would kind of avoid me and my friend that I was traveling with until we had eaten more local food. Oh. And then mosquitoes were into us.
That's interesting.
We probably smelled a little too like, ooh, where are you from?
They're like, what are you?
Yeah. I just thought that was funny that mosquitoes are like, no thanks.
That is really funny.
Yeah.
They have preferences.
They have preferences.
Yeah. So those mosquitoes also transmit the disease vertically to their offspring. So that contributes even more to the spread because they're also then spreading the disease to their own offspring.
Yikes.
And there's basically no hope of eradicating it completely due to its enzootic cycle. So that's in the mosquito population, and it's also spread through primates as well.
Yeah.
Scientists originally believed that the disease was spread through miasma, or bad air.
Oh.
Much like the Black Plague. They thought that was spread through miasma as well.
False.
Yeah, sorry, little plague doctor, your mask isn't helping. But much later, it discovered that it was a vector-borne disease and led to the development of the vaccines that we use today. And it most likely originated from West Africa and arrived as a result of the slave trade.
Mm. Just another negative connotation to don't get people to do things for free.
I know, I'm like, guess what? It's your fault for bringing people against their will.
Yes, I think that's on you.
Yeah.
And sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. Mosquitoes live near areas of water, so they most likely arrived via the barrels of water that were often kept on slave ships.
Mm.
And now I will go over what the symptoms are of yellow fever, which are not very nice.
Uh-oh. I'm like, do I have yellow fever? I'll find out.
No. I'm like, well, if you do, you definitely don't have the like worst type.
Okay, good.
So it has a 3 to 6 day incubation period, and the first symptoms are fever, headache, back pain, chills, and vomiting. So that initial period can like be mistaken for a lot of other diseases just because it's pretty general flu-like symptoms. And then 15% of cases go into the second phase, which includes recurring fever, jaundice, which contributes to the yellow part of yellow fever.
Okay, I was wondering.
Bleeding from eyes, mouth, and GI tract, and kidney failure.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And, bloody vomit too.
No,
that's fun. The fatality rate is 15 to 20% or higher, and there is no treatment other than supportive therapy or prevention through vaccination. And the vaccine that we have today is an attenuated vaccine, which means it's a live virus. And currently, as of today, it is endemic in Africa and South America, so that's where it's most common.
Oof.
It is spread other places,
right,
as well, but that is where most cases are. The first outbreak of yellow fever recorded was in 1647 in the Isle of Barbados, and an outbreak was recorded by Spanish colonists in the Yucatan Peninsula, and the indigenous Mayan people called the illness, I think it's pronounced xekic, which means blood vomit.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So that was the only thing I could really find about the 1647 outbreak.
Mm.
But we'll be talking about several other outbreaks.
Okay.
So in 1793, Philadelphia was the perfect place for an outbreak, as it was surrounded by marshes, swamps, and holes in the ground that held rainwater. It was also a port city, importing goods and slaves at their docks.
You said Philadelphia?
Yes.
So, was Benjamin Franklin dodging yellow fever?
Probably.
Probably.
Alexander Hamilton? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did he die? I don't know.
I don't remember.
Don't come for me, anyone.
I'm like, I only know him from his hit Broadway show, right?
In 1793, the yellow fever in Philadelphia killed 5,000 or more people just between August 1st and November 9th. And by the end of September, 20,000...
Can you imagine? I'm just thinking, that is like prime humidity era, too. Mm-hmm. And the East Coast is just like, can you imagine? It's like hot and everyone's dying.
No.
That's like my least favorite, two least favorite things together.
Humidity and people dying.
Yeah.
By the end of September, 20,000 people had fled the city, including officials. So anyone that was left was like, sucks for you. There's no officials to organize anything.
Officiate.
The mortality rate peaked in October before frost finally killed mosquitoes, and doctors tried various treatments, but no one knew at the time that the disease was being transmitted by mosquitoes. And there was a fever hospital organized, and they requested assistance from the Free African People Society because they mistakenly believed that people of African descent would have partial immunity like they did with malaria. So black nurses aided the sick, and black men were hired to take away the dead, which most people would not touch. Unfortunately, as you can imagine, the black aid workers got sick and died at the same rate as non-black people. And as citizens were fleeing Philadelphia, other cities such as Baltimore and New York City had a quarantine against refugees from Philadelphia. However, New York did send financial aid, which was very nice of them. And this part, so during the Civil War, many soldiers died from yellow fever. And this guy, Dr. Luke Pryor Blackburn, was nicknamed Dr. Black Vomit.
Oh, gosh.
Because he sent clothes soiled by yellow fever to the northern states in an attempt to win the war. He also attempted to send more soiled clothing and blankets to Abraham Lincoln. Which I'm like, what? What kind of plan is that?
What
like,
kind of care package?
I know, and I'm like, man, Abraham Lincoln just dodging assassination attempts everywhere and then eventually not dodging.
He's like, Martha, this blanket smells terrible. Wait, no. Mary. Mary or Martha? Mary?
Mary.
Mary. Yeah, Mary Sorry, Lincoln. Martha.
Martha Washington.
Martha, okay.
Yeah, that's what you're thinking.
I take it back. Here he goes. Mary, this blanket smells awful. She's like, why are you talking to Martha?
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. I just can't stop picturing Abraham Lincoln opening that package. I'm sure he didn't actually
I'm sure
get
he
to
didn't.
Him.
He had some guy that was like, ooh.
But it's a funny image.
It is.
In 1878, there was an epidemic in Memphis. It was an El Nino year, which caused it to be a lot warmer and caused it to rain more, drawing more mosquitoes. City officials voted against a quarantine, and there was a mass exodus in August, and people were easily able to identify houses with dead bodies due to the residents being swarmed by flies.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Dead bodies also accumulated as there was a shortage of grave diggers. And there is a mass grave in Memphis that holds 1,500 unidentified victims of the plague. A third of the people that remained in Memphis died from the fever, and the Yellow Fever Commission was formed after the Memphis epidemic, and it was a team made up of four people based in Cuba. In 1886, Cuban doctor Carlos Finlay discovered that the disease was carried by the Aedes aegypti mosquito, but he was ridiculed for his theory at the time, and it was only accepted 20 years later when Dr. Walter Reed confirmed his theory. The last major outbreak of yellow fever occurred in 1905 in New Orleans, The yellow fever vaccine was developed by Max Thaler in the 1930s, and he received a Nobel Prize for his work, which saved many lives, but the disease risk is still high today. Urban disease spread can be controlled by public health interventions, but the enzootic and sylvatic cycles, which is the mosquito and primates that carry this disease, are much harder to control. Mm-hmm. And the second cycle transmission can lead to larger outbreaks due to spillover from primate populations. And a spillover event is when a disease spills over from animal populations into the human populations. Mm-hmm. So, like the SARS-CoV-2.
Right.
So, yeah. Those are scary.
Yeah, that is.
Most recently, cases of yellow fever have been reported in Brazil and Nigeria. And yellow fever can be difficult to diagnose because it mimics other diseases like malaria, leptospirosis, and other hemorrhagic fevers. Modern prevention of the disease relies on vaccines because there is no antiviral treatment. Since the disease's sylvatic cycle is so hard to control, it's very important for researchers to see how yellow fever affects primates as well as what primates' role in the spread of yellow fever is. And as far as yellow fever today, new areas of research have begun to focus on intervention planning. Some reachers are... Reachers, oh my gosh. Some Jack Reachers.
Reacher.
Some researchers are using epidemiology data to assess vaccine impact, and others are working on methods to predict outbreaks. Climate change also plays a huge role in the spread of yellow fever, as it has increased the spread of mosquitoes, and it's also creating more aggressive mosquitoes, which is fun.
The last thing we need.
And deforestation also contributes. As humans go into the deforested areas, they're more likely to get into closer contact with the sylvatic cycle. So deforestation is also another thing that is causing more spread of disease.
So far I've learned slavery is bad, deforestation is bad, climate change is bad.
What
mosquitoes
a
are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spillover events like the ones in Nigeria and Brazil show that there is a potential for the re-urbanization of the virus, where it will be in more urban areas like the Philadelphia and Memphis areas. Mm-hmm. It seems to be difficult to get definite numbers on how many people a year are getting infected by yellow fever, but in 2013, 84 to 170,000 people in Africa came down with this severe yellow fever, and of those, 29,000 to 60,000 died from yellow fever. The actual number of cases is most likely 10 to 150 times higher than reported.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It's really scary. There is a lot more surveillance on epizootic cases of spread among primates than there is of those among humans, which I'm not really sure why it's not being surveilled as well. And currently, yellow fever is not a problem in Asia, even though Aedes aegypti are present in Asia. So
they have more manners.
Maybe. Mm. But the potential of a much wider spread is there, because all it would take would be for one infected person to spread to another. So I'm not sure why that's the case, that it hasn't spread.
That's really interesting. Yeah,
but as soon as one person got it,
don't encourage them. Don't give them the idea.
I won't encourage them. But
the mosquitoes listening to this podcast, you stay out of Asia.
Let's just hope. A lot of areas will require that you show that you've been vaccinated for yellow fever when you travel to different countries.
That's true.
It's called a yellow passport.
Yeah, I have worked. With my job, I work sometimes in infectious disease, and you have to be certified. I don't know where you get your certification, but it's through the government. And doctors have to apply for the certification to give the vaccine to travel.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a big deal. And there's like only one in the area that has it.
Yeah. And this research is obviously very important, but it's also really important due to the fact that it could lead to a spillover event. So it could potentially be our next pandemic if it is not controlled. But yeah, that's, I hate to end it there, but yeah, that is
just, when you go to bed at night, just pray for no bloody vomit in your future.
Yeah.
Or however you want to think about it.
Pray that there's no spillover event.
I just don't like the term spillover anyway. It just sounds like, why are you letting the spill be over things?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. But in my head, I'm like, stop it.
Talk to those bats and primates and mosquitoes. Yeah.
Okay. I will.
So my sources for this episode were This Podcast Will Kill You, episode 10 on yellow fever, our dearest friend Wikipedia, and History of Yellow Fever in the U.S. by the American Society for Microbiology. And I also just wanted to say that I recommend in general, if you are interested in learning about other diseases or spillover events, hemorrhagic fevers, any of that, I highly recommend This Podcast Will Kill You. It's hosted by two epidemiologists. And then I also recommend the book Spillover by David Quammen. In the book, he basically, him and other scientists, predicted that the next spillover epidemic would come out of China and be from bats, and that was from before COVID. So
he's onto something.
I read that during COVID because I'm a crazy person, but it was really interesting.
Well, I guess he knows what he's talking about.
He does. Yeah,
we all need to listen to him.
But yeah, it's very interesting. He goes into different and zoonotic diseases.
Yeah.
So. Interesting.
Rabies and zoonotic. I don't remember.
I don't think that would necessarily be considered a spillover event, because it's not like a epidemic.
Yeah, that's true.
They do, I believe This Podcast Will Kill You has an episode on rabies.
It does. I remember. Yeah. It's really fascinating.
It's been a while since I listened to that one.
Mm-hmm.
But also, just another shout out to them, because I love their podcast so much. They just did episodes on long COVID and chronic fatigue syndrome.
Oh.
Which was super...
I need to listen to long COVID, especially.
Yeah.
Because my asthma has turned into long COVID. I don't really have it so much anymore, but... The first time I got COVID, it's like it just, I mean, like 2 years later, it'll just rear its stupid head.
Yeah. It's really interesting because, like, obviously I don't want anyone to have long COVID, but long COVID seems to be more recognized and validated than chronic fatigue syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
I think because there's like a clear disease that it has resulted from.
Right.
So a lot of research that is going into long COVID is actually really beneficial for chronic fatigue syndrome as well.
That's good.
So,
because chronic fatigue is kind of a pandemic in its own right.
Yeah. And for, I guess I should say, for those that don't know, I have chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah.
So that is why it's important to me. But, I mean, I want everyone to get the proper health care that they need.
Right.
So. And everyone should.
They should.
Yeah.
But just don't get yellow fever.
Yeah, if you can avoid it at all, I would recommend not getting it.
Right. Okay. That's super helpful. And thank you. I've learned so much today.
Oh, thank you.
Just another reason to hate mosquitoes.
I know. They carry so much disease.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I don't know, I don't really know what their benefit is.
I don't know. There's gotta be something, right?
Yeah. Well, are you ready for my story?
Yes. Do you need a break for, like, drink or anything? Just want to check.
Yes. Okay. Okay, so today I'm going to tell you, Olivia and dear listener. Mm-hmm. Listeners?
Only one.
About L'Inconnu de la Seine, which is French. It means unknown woman of the Seine, who is also known as the most kissed face in history. And oh, you're going to find out why it's medically related. Maybe I'll just wait to give my resources at the end like you did, because that's, I don't want to give anything away.
Okay.
So for over 60 years, medical students have practiced CPR on dummy dolls.
Uh-huh.
There's one in particular, I'm sure you can imagine it in your head, of just like a very like kind of serene, placid face. I'm sure we can think of the Office episode. but this doll in particular is called Resusci Annie, or Rescue Anne. And this is a doll that, if you are aware, you compress the chest and you can breathe air into the mouth, whether with your own mouth or with a little device. And so this dummy is built so that you can practice on not a human and not hurt them. So it's like,
yeah,
ideal. A lot of people didn't realize that this face on this dummy is actually based on a real person.
I didn't.
You didn't?
No, not until you told me.
And this is a face of not just some random person, but a teenage girl who was found dead in the Seine in Paris in the late 19th century. Her body was never identified, but her face lived on in infamy for the rest of her little existence.
This sounds like one of those creepy short stories you'd read in school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You read it in school, and at the end your teacher's like, and now we're going to practice CPR on her face. And all the kids scream. Okay, so we are starting in roughly 1881 in Paris. So Paris had built a morgue that could be seen through a plate glass window.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Paris officials would find unidentified bodies, they would take them to the morgue, clean them up, prop them up. So, and it could be, they said it 14 people at a time could fit in this area. And passersby could either just come and look, because, you know, Victorian era Europe was unhinged. Just right. Let's go take a walk by the dead bodies. Or primarily it was for identifying the unidentified already.
Sorry, real quick. Whenever mm-hmm. someone says that true crime is a new fad, I'm like, hello, look at Victorian England.
Yeah. They're like, hey, on our date, before we head to dinner, do you want to go pass by the dead body window?
Or, like, let's go watch a public execution.
Yeah. And she's like, I never thought you would ask. So, yeah, it was, you know, morbid curiosity, mm-hmm. like you said, or it was because hopefully they can be identified before they become so decomposed that they just have to bury them and they're right. long forgotten.
Yeah.
So keeping that in mind, just a few years later, as I mentioned before, a body of a young woman was fished out of the Seine, which I'm sure everyone knows, but just in case you don't, the Seine is the primary river running through Paris. So it was said there was no evidence of violence upon her body, so they weren't really sure how she died.
Mm-hmm.
It was assumed that she perhaps intentionally drowned herself, which they said in the article I read that it at the time it was nothing new, because poverty, I mean, if you had nothing else in your life, you were either homeless or, you know, parentless, instead of, you know, resorting to a life of like sex work or something like that, some people would just feel like, I'm just gonna end it all, which is very sad.
Mm-hmm.
But that was more common.
Yeah.
It was said that in this particular year, 200 people were pulled out of the Seine's murky water. by river police, and at least a quarter were already corpses at the time, or they had, wow, you know, passed away once they were pulled, yeah, down. And half of those were pulled out from either attempted unaliving or successful unaliving. And then it was said that young women made the largest population of these said people, which is very sad. They didn't have a lot of prospects.
They didn't, no.
So since this young woman was unidentified, she was taken to this particular morgue. She was propped up on that marble slab and displayed in hopes that someone would walk by the window and identify her. And of course, this was intentional so that, you know, people could see her. She captured the imagination of many Parisians, you know, those few days that she was there. Mm-hmm. And many noted how mysterious and beautiful she looked, including the pathologist on duty. And he named her L'Inconnu de la Seine. Okay. Because he was so entranced by her face. A little eerie, but okay.
Yeah, okay. You spend, mm-hmm, a lot of time with bodies, I guess.
Right? He's like, I don't have a lot of people to talk to. This is my new friend. So he was so entranced by her beauty that he, knowing she still had not been identified and she would need to be buried, he made a plaster cast of her face. And he said, quote, her beauty was breathtaking and showed few signs of distress at the time of passing, so bewitching that I knew beauty as such must be preserved, end quote.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm having some feelings about that.
Right. We all know somebody who could, that one creepy guy in high school, were like, oh, that was you, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
So true.
Okay, so he made her a death mask. And that's what, you know, if you don't know, a death mask is a likeness of either wax or plaster, which was, you know, to preserve a dead person's likeness. Mm-hmm. And it was actually very common at the time.
Yeah.
Usually it was done for people who were infamous or people who had money. Like, a lot of times they would do that with, like, saints or nuns. You'll see them in cathedrals throughout Europe. But this particular girl got her own death mask thanks to the creepy pathologist.
Creepier, perhaps, just,
or just nice. Lonely and nice.
Let's just hope he's just
nice. I think he was just nice.
Yeah.
And a lot of times death masks were given to families for, like, just mementos or to create a portrait. So if somebody had already passed away, they could at least have it, like, propped up, and then someone would create a painting out of it to be like, here they are,
yeah,
in their last beautiful dress. And actually, this has gone on a long time. It started to, like, build up in popularity in ancient Egypt. So people just really, if you didn't have photography, which we know photography hasn't been around a long time, mm-hmm, you know, and paintings can take a long time, the quickest way to do it is just plaster their face.
I mean, yeah, that does make sense.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. So this young woman's face was so popular because she looked so serene that before long, she became almost as popular as the Mona Lisa for this one particular summer in, wow, Paris, at least. She started appearing in shops all over Paris. And in following years, copies of her mask became a fixture in fashionable homes across Europe.
What?
Which is strange to think that you could just be sitting down for dinner and look over at the smiling, serene face of a dead person you've never met.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's my thing I bought at the store.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her smile alone bewitched artists, poets, and novelists. And over the decades, dozens of poems were written and stories invented to give her an identity. Books in the 1900s were written about the mask entrancing men, because what else do men do but be entranced by masks?
Even if you're dead, you still can't keep the men away.
Okay, so if you're a mask in the woods, would you rather be with a bear or a man?
A bear.
And there is an example of a actually a movie, a screenplay and then a movie, was made in 1936 about the story of a man who fell in love with a mask, that he left his wife for the mask and then fell to his own death. So it was like the mask was luring him. The mask had abilities. Okay. It didn't. I'm like, just say you want a divorce. Like, right? Why blame it on a mask?
He's like, this mask doesn't talk back to me.
Yeah, this mask doesn't tell me to take out the trash. Okay. So many years later, the mask fell out of popularity because trends changed. And it seems like it's said that people became less macabre. No, they just became macabre and quiet.
Yeah. They're like, this is gauche macabre.
He's like, that's weird. I'm going to go read about it in secret in my room. So now we are in the late 1950s. So medical students are starting to learn and practice CPR. Like, this has become a thing. Archer Gordon, a member of the American Heart Association CPR committee, he realized that a CPR dummy could save medical students from unnecessary pain and potential rib damage of practicing CPR, which is true. I just recently got my CPR certification renewed.
Oh, cool.
I had to practice on a dummy, and you have to press so hard because the dummies are really advanced now, and it's hooked up to a computer, and it'll tell you if you're not pressing hard enough or if it's too much. And it's when you get to the point where you are pressing hard enough, it is a workout.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, am I actually helping this person or am I killing them further? It's how it feels. But
I know. It's really common for people to have cracked ribs after being resuscitated.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that in mind, we now know this idea is good.
Yeah.
A CPR dummy is good. So to manufacture such a thing, Archer Gordon and a Norwegian colleague sought out the help of a Norwegian toy maker named Åsmund Lærdal.
I love that name.
Right. Right. At the time, Lærdal had started manufacturing imitation wounds for the Red Cross for first aid training in Norway and Sweden, which is actually genius.
I'm sorry, did you say wounds or wombs?
Oh, wounds.
Okay.
Whoa. Uh-oh. I mean, the wombs would be a little weird, but maybe.
Well, I mean, you know, like, that's in true. Gynecologist offices, they have, like, the...
That's true. They do.
Yeah.
Well, and I know they have, like, dummies for doctors to practice delivering babies. So yeah. Actually, both make sense. So he might have not been wombing yet, but he maybe was in the future.
Well, he might make womb.
He might make womb.
Oh, God. I hate that.
He's alone in his womb thinking about wombs.
Oh, God.
Okay, so he's making imitation wounds, and maybe wombs, and he was like, yeah, you know what, this is a good idea, a life-size doll for training purposes. Like, he's like, this is my jam. He's like, I forget toys, I'm ready to make people-size dolls. So it was interesting to note that at the same time he had considered making a doll, he had just seen a reproduction of L'Inconnu de la Seine on the wall of a relative's home. He had been there at dinner, looked over, and he's like, oh, there's that face. And so he just kind of put two together, and he was like, I'm going to make this CPR mannequin have the face of this random face I saw.
Interesting.
Yeah. So by 1960, in Stavanger, Norway, Resusi Annie made her debut at the first International Symposium on Resuscitation. So, this CPR mannequin changed the course of history medically as we know it, and it changed the Lærdal company from toys to just medical devices, which is still in business today. They still have a functioning website where you can buy Resusi Annie.
That's so cool.
And when I was doing my CPR training, I actually noticed the name Lærdal. And I was like, oh, look at it. It's real. Cool. It really happened. The company estimates that 300 million people around the world have been trained in CPR. most of them with the help of Rasusi Annie. And one of these people was Michael Jackson.
What? I bet you weren't expecting that.
Not a million years.
And so he used the refrain, "Annie, are you okay?" in the song "Smooth Criminal."
Oh,
he was inspired by his CPR training.
That's kind of amazing.
Isn't that amazing? Because when you're practicing, especially back then, you don't do it now, but you don't talk to your mannequin at all. But the line is used in CPR training for trainees to check on the response of the patient, because her name is Annie, and you're like, "Annie, are you okay?"
That is so funny. Yeah.
She's like, "I wasn't struck by a smooth criminal. I was actually choking on something." Okay. So over the decades, questions have arose over the authenticity of the face. Some state the mask of the face seems too healthy to be a mask taken from a corpse. Many question the ethics of making reproductions of a deceased person's face and selling it without their or their family's consent. It said, the article I read, it said it would be ethically troubling today, but since it was so long ago, it's now a blurred line, or like just a middle ground between judging the past by present day standards, because back then it was just like, she was even lucky to be given the hopes of being identified.
I mean, they put their bodies up in windows. So let's just take that into consideration.
I mean, honestly, if somebody told me that my face was to help people save people's lives, I'd be like, heck yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But, you know, we don't know. And it can be noted that thanks to Annie's face, she has saved so many lives since becoming a mannequin that it's an interesting parallel thinking of how young she lost her life.
Yeah.
So it's like this kind of balance there. And thankfully, CPR is still widely taught today. And the dummy is the most integral part of learning the technique. Mm-hmm. It's very life-saving. And ethics aside, she is here to stay. And chances are you have possibly kissed this young woman's face.
I know when you first said that, I was like, huh?
You're like, nah. And then you're like, oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, okay. When you consider that at least 300 million people have learned CPR, you don't technically put your mouth on the dummy anymore. Mm-hmm. It's actually more preferred to use the hand pump.
Yeah.
Because germs. But I mean, if you don't have that, you have to put your mouth
you have to do it.
You have to put your mouth on them. And that is the story of the unknown woman of the Seine, also known as the CPR dummy.
Well, that was super interesting.
Right?
Yeah. I'll never look at a dummy the same way again.
No. In fact, when I was doing my my training, I had our mutual friend with us, who's a nurse. And I was like, that's her face. And she was like, no, it's not. And then I showed her the death mask. And she was, I don't know if she's still convinced, but I'm like, I see it. It's like that, you know, that face. It's very serene.
Yeah.
We'll put it on our Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And her face is so neutral looking enough that you can see where it could be both man and woman, because mm-hmm. it's the same face for a man.
Yeah.
I think they just add just maybe make the bone structure a little stronger, mm-hmm. but it's the same face.
Yeah. That's so weird.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Like how long her likeness has lasted.
Yeah. For extremely long time. She unknowingly became one of the most identifiable faces. Mm-hmm. And it's like you don't even realize you know her.
I know. She went from not being identified by anyone to now everyone knows her.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a little bit sad. It's a little macabre.
Yeah.
But still cool.
It is.
It's pretty cool.
Well done.
Yay, we did it.
Yay.
I think this is episode 12 or 13.
I think it's, I want to say it's 13.
13.
Yeah.
That's Taylor Swift's episode.
Yep. It works because Tortured Poets Department has links to Insane Asylum.
That's right.
So, connection made.
Right, there we go. Like, also, it's a very good album.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just constantly playing through my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same.
Well, now comes the time where we have to awkwardly end the podcast mm-hmm. and decide if we have anything else left to say.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I do. I'm excited for whatever's next.
Me too.
Episode 14.
I have to... Oh, I remember what I wanted to do next.
Oh, I was supposed to do my resources. Okay. Oh my goodness. Yes. Let me scroll back there. Everyone pretend like this is still the end of my episode. And I got my resources from an Amusing Planet article written by Kaushik Patawari. Kaushik Patawari. An article from CPREducationersInc.com. And a live science article written by Ashley P. Taylor.
Very nice.
That's it.
I don't know, what was I going to say? It was something about the podcast.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, we need to decide what our next theme is.
Yeah. Oh, we will.
We're not going to tell you guys, though. It's going to be a surprise.
We won't tell you because we don't know what it is yet.
No, I have some ideas, but...
I do, too.
I have to run it by first.
We have to run it by our plague doctor first.
Yes. Wilson, what do you think?
And he says, it wasn't the rats! Quit blaming the rats.
I'm just picturing Robert Sean Leonard saying, oh, it wasn't the rats!
It wasn't the rats!
Oh.
But, I mean, yeah, we'll figure it out, and you will get to find out what it is.
Yeah, so...
That's exciting.
Next time you get CPR certified... Think about Annie.
Think about Annie. Think about Michael Jackson. Maybe not. I don't know.
Maybe just the song.
The song.
It still slaps, so.
It really does. And maybe think about getting some bug spray.
Definitely some bug spray. Mm-hmm. And if you are able to, get your vaccinations.
Please do.
Very important.
If not just for you, but for other people who are more delicately health-wise.
Because we know there are those that... Because they are compromised, they can't get it. So let's get it for those people.
About those people.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it.
I think that's it.
Well, until next time,
stay curious
and stay odd.
Please stay odd.